I don't care about the episode numbers at all anymore. I've completely evolved beyond episode numbers. Hello and welcome to The Dirt. I'm Tim Wright, and today I'm here with Steve Hickey.
Good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
I said good morning, Tim. You're confusing me. What's happening?
Also here with Mark Grambo.
Hey, Tim.
And special guest Jen Schiffer, open web engineer at Boku. Jen, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
We're very excited to have you. This is part of our series on open source, and Jen, we wanted to talk to you about maintaining open source products, as we know you have a lot of experience with that, and it's sometimes it's a pain in the ass, sometimes it's great. So we just wanted to get into that with you a little bit.
Yeah, so I was wondering if you could start by talking about Boku and their relationship with open source software a bit.
Well, Boku, we consider ourselves an open source company. Mm. We are very involved in various open source projects. We get 25% open source time to work on open source stuff when we're not doing our consulting projects or education courses. And we deal just with open web technology. And a lot of the projects that we do consulting with end up being open source projects. So, like, we've worked with companies like Mozilla and stuff like that to create software for them that ends up being open source for everyone to use. Mm-hmm. And so the company, the whole theme of it really is kind of open source, open web.
Now, how long have you been at Boku?
I've been at Boku since, I think, April 14th was the day I started. So, like, a little over half a year, maybe.
Was that one of the things that attracted you to the company, that they were so open source related?
Yeah, definitely. I was previously at the NBA, the National Basketball Association, which, you know, being a huge media company, was sort of, I wouldn't say anti-open source. We use a lot of open source technology in our work, but anti-open sourcing our stuff. I worked a lot with statistics and with video, and video is like a huge source of contention between media companies and I guess between content providers and the people who are building the products that provide that content to their users. So I felt sort of restricted in what I can do outside of work, and also within work. I felt like I was building really awesome stuff that a lot of other people can use, and that it would be a good look for the NBA to open source stuff, but they were wholeheartedly against it. I had known Boku as a company. I actually learned JavaScript because of Boku. I went to their training a couple of years ago, almost 2 years ago this December. I was like, I'm going to learn JavaScript. Here's this company that's teaching it. And so that was like my first intro to them. And now I'm here working for them and doing open source stuff. And I don't have to worry about, you know, if what I'm making can or cannot be open to the public, which is really awesome.
That's a lot better than my trajectory. I went to a JavaScript class with them 3 years ago, and 3 years later, I still suck at JavaScript. So there we go.
That is accurate.
Yeah, Tim can confirm that.
Oh, I didn't say I was good at JavaScript.
Oh, we just assumed.
Yeah, well.
So, Jen, you also do a number of side projects or personal projects, it looks like. I don't know if that's part of your 25% time with Boku or stuff on the side, but clearly, you know, contributing to the web, both in, you know, maybe serious ways, but also satirical, crazy, fun projects seems to be built into your DNA. Can you talk a little bit about the kinds of projects you like to pursue and why you like to put them out there?
So I work on a bunch of things. I have my satirical writing, which I haven't been doing as much since I've had more time to work on my side projects. I've been working on this pixel art editor, make8bitart.com. I started that a few years ago when I wanted to learn JavaScript. That was like my first project that I dove into to learn the language. And that's been doing pretty well, and it's open source, and I've had other contributors add on to it. That's probably my biggest open source project in terms of contributions and users as well. Then I have my newest project is an art blog called Vart, V-A-R-T, at vart.institute. And it is an art blog where I write about artists, and then I generate their work with my own sort of flair to it using JavaScript. That one's also open source. There hasn't been many contributions outside of grammar fixes and stuff because I'm a terrible writer, but I'm like fully open about that. And yeah, so those are my two main things. I'm a CouchDB committer. I did a project with the folks at Cloudant who are working on the front end for CouchDB. So I became a committer after working on that. I haven't touched that in a few weeks because I've been busy with other project. I'm building an open source tool called Audience Engine for WFMU, which is like the longest running public radio station in the country. And we're rebuilding all of their tools for DJs and listeners and then open sourcing it, which is really, really awesome.
Oh, wow. Do you think that would be useful for podcasts?
Anybody, it's open. Anybody can use it, and it's going to be really awesome. I'm excited about that project.
Nice.
So you've got your hands across a lot of different projects, and one of the big reasons we wanted to have you on was to talk about that relationship with your contributors and with your users of the software and anywhere from your personal projects to the stuff of Boku. What do you, when you put a project out there in the open source community, what are your expectations that of people's involvement, and how do you think that jives or doesn't match up with the expectations they have the other end of the audience has of you?
Jives.
Yeah, I'll use the word jives when I want to, Tim.
I feel like the best way to make sure that you as a project owner and the contributors can jive is
nice.
That everybody is respectful of each other and nice, and also understand how difficult it can be for both groups. Open source is super complicated in that you're opening up your work to everybody, and everybody is a very diverse group. So you have to deal with people who are combative at first, or people who are really shy. They like want to contribute, and they'll like contact you by other media instead of, you know, through the repo where the project lives. So it's really also, a big personal relations kind of, industry, open source. I went to college. I got my master's degree, and in college, like, I learned Java, and I don't use Java anymore. But I think the biggest thing that I learned from college is how to be with a lot of diverse people in terms of like their interests and also the way that they interact with people. So college is really useful in terms of communication and getting used to dealing with those type of people. I had like a thick skin leaving college, going into industry because of that. And it's been really helpful because there are lots of different people that come at you as a contributor or just a user. I'm sure we all know. But overall, the main thing is like we should be respectful and go into a sort of transaction, whether it's a pull request or just downloading someone's software or just starting a conversation, knowing that everyone is very different, has different things going on. Arian. So it's easier said than done because I rarely see that happen, but
there seems to be some sort of a split in the open source, you know, software plugins building or whatever, what have you, where you have places like Boku who are dedicating specific time to building these projects and I assume maintaining the projects, and then there's the portion of the community that's like I'm working at home after hours by myself building something, and then it goes out there. And maybe it gets maintained, maybe it doesn't, but it's still out there. How do you feel about the obligations of somebody who's doing work after hours on their own time, maintaining that open source that software? Or
I feel like there's no such thing as like a real obligation in open source unless there's some sort of contractual agreement. Like if I decide that I'm going to spend my 25% open source time working on make 8-bit art. Well, my job gives me 25% time. There's this agreement, an obligation for me to spend 25% of my open source time on that project. Vart, for example, my art blog, I do that a lot, mostly in my free time. So there's no obligation for me to release it at any certain point. There's no obligation at all for me to care about anything besides me putting my code out there. The better word is expectations, and whether you're willing to meet those expectations and how you handle whether or not you can meet those expectations or not. So, like, one example I was thinking of last night, I revisited a project that I'd started last year, and it's a Twitter bot, and I was using this library, this node module for connecting to the Twitter API, and I revisited it a couple of days ago, and I saw that it hadn't been updated in like a year, but the README file, the person who created the project, and this is on GitHub, said on the top of the README, this is no longer being worked on, this is deprecated, sorry for the inconvenience, which is like really nice. I didn't like try to get the thing to work or continue my project with it. I saw like, oh, he's not using it anymore. He's not building with it anymore. That was like a nice thing. Like that's one thing that like I expect is some sort of transparency with whether the project is usable in production, whether if there are no tests, if there are like plans for testing, and just sort of stuff like that. But again, there's no obligation for them to say it. I mean, I can get angry at them, but that's not going to help. They're not going to, you know what I mean, apologize if you yell at them. I mean, at least when people yell at me, the last thing I want to do is apologize. But there's like little things that you can do just to make it easier for both parties. They don't have to continue maintaining this project that they obviously don't want to do, but they're letting users know, hey, this isn't like good anymore. So it's open, like fork it. You know what I mean? If you want to like update it yourself.
Yeah.
And then everyone should be happy, if not a little inconvenienced, but that's sort of the nature of the game.
Yeah. I have one repo on GitHub that a couple of people ended up using beyond my expectations. I'm talking like 7 people, not anything significant. And I put a note in the README that says that I'm not actively maintaining this. It works the way it's going to work. There's not much to it. And then apparently I left a comment in one file saying that I intended to add support for a different CSS unit that I never got around to. And this guy from Croatia got on my case one day about, he's like, I need that unit. Can you write that for me immediately? Like, no, dude, this is really simple. Like, I'm not maintaining this. This is super simple. There's nothing to this. Like, if you need it, either do it or accept that I'm not maintaining this. It's an expectations thing. Like if I had written in there, oh, I'm actively developing this, or if there was any history beyond the last year and a half on it, maybe it would have been a reasonable expectation. But the request was basically drop everything and write this.
No, God forbid somebody learns CSS or JavaScript themselves.
Yeah, seriously.
And finish it.
Well, I just thought it was just such a oddball request.
I made this project that geocodes addresses. And I found that a lot of journalists were using it that don't know PHP. It was written in PHP and using the Google Maps API. And so I continue to get a lot of emails from journalists who are super panicky and frantic that they can't get it to work. And they're like on a deadline. And so they're just like, I need this now. I need you to fix this, blah, 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 blah. And it's like the last thing I want to read when I check my email in the morning is like some journalist yelling at me because of some software I wrote like 3 years ago. Because like, I don't know. But yeah, usually it's those. It's one of the things I hate about open source are the emails.
So you made a comment a while back that caught our eye. It was open source is a prison. Wondering if that's related to any of this. And you had mentioned that you wanted a chance to explain that.
Yeah. So I spoke at Thunder Plains JS, which is this really awesome conference in Oklahoma City. It was my first time down there. It was pretty great. I didn't get to meet Mark Cuban or anything like that, but I did go to Kevin Durant's restaurant. So in my talk, I was originally going to talk about art and technology, and then like last minute I was like, you know what, like I had this conversation with somebody that wanted to contribute to make 8-bit art, and the talk started with this conversation, and it was they wanted to do a pull request, so they PM'd me on IRC. They said, I want to do a PR request on make 8-bit art. And I was like, okay, like, go for it. And they're like, well, I want to, like, put all of your build files on a gitignore because you shouldn't have those, like, in your repo. And the reason why I have those build files is that I have people who aren't developers that download make 8-bit art and use it on their machines, and they're artists, and they don't know much besides how to unzip a file. They don't have Node installed on their computer. They don't know Grunt. If I ask them to open up their terminal, they're just going to be like, you know what, I'm going to go use like Photoshop or something like that. And this person just responded like, okay, whatever. Like they were not satisfied with that answer. And I just remember thinking to myself, why do I even let people say words to me as if I care? Like, and then I was like, wow, this is making me really cynical and angry. And I totally get like why I have some conversations with people who are big in the open source community about like avoiding social media and all this sort of stuff like that. I talked my coworker Ben Allman, who created Grunt, him and I are always talking about like avoiding social media because I can only imagine the stuff that like Ben gets with the whole like build wars, you know? I mean, why are you using Grunt when you could be using Gulp and all this sort of stuff like that, you know? Someone asked me that about a joke project I made at JSConf called Jort Sort. And it was a satirical thing. It was totally fake. And I used Grunt. And someone came up to me and said, why are you using Grunt? Why don't you use Gulp? And Ben's sitting right next to me. And I was just like, hand up, stop, stop.
It's like, look, the Gulp guy is right. The Grunt guy is right here. Why don't you ask him why I used it?
And the Gulp guy is like at the other end of the table. You know what I mean? And we're all friends and pals. It's like, what is this like fake rivalry thing? And that's part of the whole thing. Like, you want to contribute and you want people to know your stuff and use your stuff. The more people that use it, the better you feel that you've contributed something really great and useful. And also the more contributors you get. And I always love when people want to contribute to my stuff when they're nice about it. But then you have, you know, you get involved in these like things where people pit you against other developers and all that sort of stuff like that. Especially when like if you've built a JavaScript framework, then like you're the enemy of all the other people who have made JavaScript frameworks. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of where the open source is a prison thing came from. My friend Anton, who made JS Hint, he said the phrase to me first, and he no longer owns the JS Hint project. He gave it to my coworker Rick Waldron. Who's been doing a really great job, because when you build something that tells developers that they're programming incorrectly, like that, when you openly say that you have an opinion,
I can imagine that going over well.
That's like to me like the ultimate like prison you're getting yourself into. You sort of feel trapped. Like you want to do it, but then you have to deal with all this coming at you. So that was where that came from. I used that in a slide, and that was the one, of course, that everyone took the photo of and posted. So then everyone's like, that's so weird. Jen Shiver seems to love open source, but now she's like having a meltdown about it. And it's like, doesn't everyone at some point have a meltdown about open source? I do it regularly.
I think it goes beyond open source. You know, the internet itself, as you're saying, just any modicum of internet fame is a prison. Steve, we got into a conversation a few weeks ago over lunch about what would you prefer to finish your life, to die and to fade into obscurity, to be famous or to be infamous. And in the end, I said, I would so much rather fade into obscurity than be famous because of the crazy shit that comes with having any modicum of fame at this point, anywhere from frantic people expecting crazy things from you to death threats to everyone in your family for, you know, doing anything on the internet.
Or the reaction of r/Bitcoin to an article you wrote. Oh, my God, that was my favorite thing about Bitcoin for a while.
Oh, man. Yeah, it's weird. I like to use the term popularity instead of fame because I don't think that web developers can be famous unless they become like teen pop stars or basketball players and stuff like that.
Mark's attempting that.
Zeldin's putting out an album, I hear.
Jay-Z, yeah.
The new
Jay-Z album's going to drop soon.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I want, like when I work on my stuff and my satire stuff, I started writing satire to my coworker at the MBA, Nick Ortenzio, who also does some satire with me. And then, like, we started posting on Medium because Medium was, like, to me, the TED Talks of blogging. And I was like, we got to, like, put our satire on it because people will believe it. And that's, like, exactly, like, what the case was. I was right. And when I write and, like, put my code out there, it's for selfish reasons. One, like, I want to make my friends laugh. And fortunately, I've made a lot lot of friends over the past year through doing my work, which I wouldn't have been able to do if I wasn't involved in the open source community. I mean, I used to do a lot of WordPress development, and so I have a lot of friends in the WordPress community, and then I met Boku through like jQuery stuff and that open source stuff, and now I'm working at Boku and doing, like, open source has been, like, the best thing that I've ever gotten into. But then it, like, complicates things in that you do expose yourself to a lot of people. And sometimes I'm in, like, sometimes I'm feeling really emo about, like, something going on in my personal life. And then the last thing I want to do is check my email and have someone yell at me because they thought something worked a certain way and then it didn't. And they made a demand about it. And I so badly want to tell them to, like, just, like eat garbage. But it's like, no, no, I gotta, like... I've used a lot of self-restraint over the past few weeks. I'm very proud of myself.
No, don't restrain yourself. Yeah,
this is probably why I wouldn't be a good open source maintainer.
I've had conversations with people, just like random tweets sent out, and they're like, oh, why didn't you do this, 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 and this? And I'm like, because I don't have enough internet arguments. That's why I did that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's the poison of free, no matter what you're doing, whether it's open source, you're actually putting out a product for free, not open source. You can do everything you can in your power to set expectations up front, but people make unrealistic demands of free no matter what. There's you see all sorts of, you know, updates to software come out and the app gets flooded with 1-star reviews in the App Store because it doesn't do this crazy thing that I want. It's like, it was fucking free, man. Calm it down.
Well, it's like Jen, I don't know, we took over Refresh Boston a little while ago, and we're in Watertown, which is just outside the city, and there was just such an uproar about this free event that we're moving 5 miles out of the city.
People flipped out. Yeah, it was hilarious.
And it was fine, because we're still putting on good events.
Oh, and for every person who has a difficult time getting out of the city, we opened up the thing to people who had trouble getting into the city. So, fine, you're going to piss off people no matter what. I find so many... The internet as a whole has such crazy expectations. I found this great article the other day from... what is the name of the developer? Greenheart Games, which makes a game called Game Dev Tycoon. It's just a few developers, and it's a very, very small team. And they released it for Mac, Windows, and Linux, and they, in addition to putting it out for sale, they also uploaded a cracked version with no DRM and put a torrent out, but they made one profound change to the cracked, you know, pre-pirated for other people to pirate version, which is they made it, you know, in this game, you're simulating being a game developer, and you're actually running a company, and they made it so that after you get to a certain point, no matter what you do, your game gets pirated by so many people that your company shuts down because you run out of income.
That's only in the pirated version.
That's only in the pirated version. And so they got all this wonderful, all these wonderful forum posts from people who you know were, you know, getting the free version when the thing costs like $8, $4, whatever it is. And they're like, I don't know what happens. No matter what I do, you know, millions of people suddenly pirate. It doesn't matter how good of a game I make. The moment I get my game to 8 or 9 quality, it just gets totally pirated. And then I have to shut down my company. Why are people so mean pirating my game? It's like, there's no self-awareness.
The irony is completely lost.
Completely lost.
But I don't want to scare people away from open source in this show. Because there are a portion of any time you put yourself out there, the negative people are going to be the ones who speak up. Because if I have something, if I like the thing that you did, I might say thank you. And I've actually started going out of my way to say thank you to open source contributors.
Yeah, but default behavior is just use it, go.
But it's our jobs wouldn't, I don't even think they would exist in any form that they currently are without what's happened in this community with open source.
Not at all. And I think the difference, I mean, the same thing happens with proprietary software. I mean, whenever there's a new OS update, everyone's freaking out. Like, but I feel like with open source software, a lot of it is just us as individuals. We're like the brand of the product is like a person. And so we get the brunt of that backlash, I guess. Like, Ben isn't the only person contributing to Grunt. There's lots and lots of contributors, but he's sort of like the face of it, I guess. And so when people talk about Grunt or they see him at conferences, that's like who they go to. And yeah, like I said before, I wouldn't be where I am if it weren't for open source. And I do love it. I just think that people can stand to be a little bit more respectful to each other, which is the point of the whole open source is a prison phrase. And there's little things that both sides can do. Again, like contributors, project owners can be more transparent with what their expectations of contributors are. So like if you build a project and you want contributors, if you have documentation of how they should contribute, and a lot of projects do that. And then if you want to contribute, read those instructions. You know what I mean? If they say, don't just do a PR, post an issue,
surprise,
and
surprise.
Here's how to do it, and you need to have a test for it, like, follow those directions. I know a project where somebody did a PR on it that had basically, like, 50 commits on it, and this project's having a hard time merging it, even though all the stuff seems correct and seems useful, and the person who made the PR is like, just merge it. It's fine. Just merge it. It's fine. Like, that's not how it works, buddy.
Trust me. It's fine.
Yeah. Somebody at some point made a comment that you should remember whenever you make a pull request on somebody's project, you are asking them to maintain your code. That's a big request.
It's a request. Exactly.
Yeah.
A pull.
Yeah. What do you know, Tim?
Weird. I had something else. I had like one more thing I wanted to go over, and I completely blanked on it.
Great big insight.
It was
going to
be like the best part.
just going to overshadow all of us.
I got it. Oh. So there's like one thing I would like listeners to take away from this show is that you should reach out on Twitter to one person who writes or maintains the open source software or program that you use and thank them.
Just thank them.
Just
no,
say,
no,
hey,
like request tacked on the end or something like that. Just thank them.
Reach out to somebody on the jQuery team and say, thank you for maintaining jQuery for me.
I basically something owe like the entire jQuery team my ability to make it look like things are functional in what I built.
Reach out to Jen and say, thank you for your work. Yeah. I appreciate it.
Just be nice to somebody.
Yes.
That would be helpful.
Hugs all around.
I mean, the internet as a whole just really needs a code of conduct. And if you just get down to just stop being schmucks, I mean, I think the internet would be a much better place. Mm-hmm. Just be nice.
I don't see that happening, unfortunately.
But
it would be
nice. It's a tall order. Honestly, humanity could use it, but the internet's a decent manifestation.
Yes. Well, Jen, I think you took us through a great rundown of open source and people being dicks and how to be nice. I'm really glad that we could get you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
We really appreciate you taking time out of your day to help us out and provide some great content for our listeners.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen.
I love providing content.
All right.
So how can people get a hold of you, harass you if they want to?
Or ideally send you
or
lovely
say
comments.
Thank you.
Yeah. people who want to be nice and say hi can get me on Twitter. This is Jen Schiffer, S-C-H-I-F-F-E-R. And my website that has all of my projects is genmoney.biz, and that's Jen with two N's, because that's the correct way of spelling Jen. and Vart.institute is my art blog that I mentioned before, and make8bitart.com is my 8-bit art editor in the browser, which I am looking for contributors. I've posted issues of what features I want, and if you have a feature you want, post an issue.
Great. I'm going to say thank you in person. Well, over Skype. Thank you for your work. So we have some events coming up here at Fertile Soil. On December 3rd, I will be sitting on a panel about responsive design at the Gilbane Conference. We hope to see you there. We also have the next Refresh Boston event on December 18th here in Watertown. Jackson Wilkinson of Kinsights.com will be speaking on lessons learned from Silicon Valley.
I'd like to add that he sometimes goes by M. Jackson Wilkinson, and I was reading his website, and it turns out that his actual full name is Michael Jackson Wilkinson.
Wow.
So if you'd like to see Michael Jackson perform at Fresh Tilled Soil, we recommend you come here on December 18th, Michael Jackson Live.
Don't you think there's a reason that he doesn't use Michael Jackson?
We're also accepting applications now for the AUX Winter Spring 2015 session. That's an apprenticeship in user experience design. Those applications are due on December 15th, and you can find more info at freshtilledsoil.com/AUX if you're interested.
Great. And you can get us on Twitter at The Dirt Show. Please send your long-winded comments to thedirt@freshtilledsoil.com. And please review us on iTunes or wherever you're listening to us now, unless you're driving. Please don't review us while you drive. I know Mark doesn't like me saying that. I will forego 5-star reviews for safety. That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening, and we will try and do better next time.
How are they supposed to contribute if they're dead?